everybody. Welcome back to Viewing Angles, the only movie podcast currently in circulation right now. Please listen, donate to our Patreon. You know what it is. You've got the whole crew here, Elmer, Robert, and Dan. I'm going to introduce you guys now. That's where we've solved the introduction part of this.
You just have to do your job? That's how you solved it?
Yeah.
Exactly.
Dan, what the fuck were we paying you for?
Please just email me everything you want to say in the podcast so that I can read it aloud. I think that'll be the best way
well,
to go forward.
As every, like, you know, hardened listener knows, every episode is scripted.
Yes. Detailed.
Yeah.
Down to the last gasp.
We just got done with the rehearsals for this episode.
Exactly. 7 hours of rehearsals to get this right.
It's going to be great.
Listeners, you know that we've been doing, if you've been listening to the podcast the last few weeks, you know that we've been doing director spotlights, and we picked a critical darling, Paul Thomas Anderson, for the last three. And now, upon Robert's suggestion, we have gone a completely different direction.
Where not we really. It's, okay, no, he's not bad. He's just divisive.
Sure. Yes. 50% of people think he's bad. So, but he's not bad.
Oh, man. A critical darling is just another word for someone who makes good stuff.
Someone who makes boring movies. Agreed.
I mean, you could definitely say that these movies weren't. I don't know. Maybe we'll talk about this a little bit later. But so we've decided to, from now on until this pandemic is over,
which praise God, is going to be never, apparently.
We've got a few more ideas after the Aronofsky. We were doing Darren Aronofsky. He's our director, spotlight, divisive filmmaker known for his surreal and psychologically terrifying movies like Black Swan and Requiem for a Dream. We're digging into his catalog and discussing his movies. For the first one, it was my choice since I went last time. We have gone and picked a truly divisive 52% on Rotten Tomatoes movie called The Fountain. The 2006, I'm going to read the Wikipedia what it tells me, epic romantic drama film.
Epic romantic drama film.
That's which, not sure, wrong. You could, like, technically, if you got to put it in a bucket, those are the buckets.
It is dramatic.
it is dramatic. Romance, I think.
Yeah, sure.
That is technically romantic. Written and directed by Darren Aronofsky, and the story is by Aronofsky and his college roommate at Harvard. So Aronofsky's like a smart guy, which is hilarious that he made this movie. and it stars Hugh Jackman in like one of his first big dramatic turns outside of stage. You know, Hugh Jackman, very accomplished stage actor. And Rachel Weisz.
Are you telling me Wolverine isn't dramatic?
I'm saying that it is not what it's known for. It's known for being buff.
Oh, man. You gotta watch the X-Men again.
Yeah, it is weird that we decided to make like an amazing stage actor like the most ripped guy, like the ripped veiny sack of muscle.
Like, this dude was in Les Mis. Like, that's probably closer to
what
he was.
Yeah, and he was ripped in that too.
Than like Wolverine.
Oh yeah. Like, the Logan era Hugh Jackman is like, why? You're so old. You just look like some of the running scenes, you're just like, God, his skin can't contain the muscles.
Yeah.
He's so dehydrated.
He's slogging around.
He looks like when you put a hot dog in the microwave for too long.
And then put a condom on it.
Right. And it comes out ripped.
Yeah, the skin sleeve. You can see the veins. You can see the juices slipping out of it. Oh.
Yeah. So let's get into, I'm going to read just what the plot summary of it, because I honestly don't know if I could explain it. The film consists of three storylines involving immortality and the resulting loves lost and one man's pursuit of avoiding this fate in this life or beyond. Jackman and Weisz play sets of characters bonded by love across time and space. You know where this is going. A conquistador and his ill-fated queen, a modern-day, quote-unquote, scientist, and his cancer-stricken wife, and a traveler immersed in a universal journey alongside aspects of his lost love. So, this is a timey-wimey movie, but also not really.
Yeah, it's weird.
Feel
like,
small.
I honestly didn't even realize that the space traveler was supposed to be like a third timeline.
Yeah, I thought it was supposed to be a metaphor, which I guess I'm technically not wrong.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure it is a metaphor, but...
For what, Dan?
Also not, like...
For traveling to...
through space. Space.
Oh, God. I'm trying not to be, like, super dismissive of this movie, because I think it is. It definitely has some things going on. But unfortunately, it also has a lot of other stuff going on. And it's only 96. This movie's 96 minutes long. It reunites Aronofsky and his composer of Requiem for a Dream, Clint Mansell, and actress Ellen Burstyn from Requiem for a Dream. It had a budget of $35 million, which is the revised amount. Originally, this movie was going to be $70 million, have Brad Pitt and Kate Blanchett in it. And it just didn't happen because everyone said, why are you doing this? Apparently, Brad Pitt wanted rewrites to the script, and it didn't come through. So he was like, I got to pass out. He went to do Troy instead of this. Which
is fine.
It worked out.
Troy, director's cut, is a better movie than this.
Agreed.
And so the budget was $35 million, box office of $16 million. That's like the kind of flop where you don't get to make movies anymore, usually. But... Aronofsky, I think, had a pretty decent track record with profitability that he was granted a some more leeway with his next
Well, I also think he did become a critical darling from Pi and Requiem for a Dream. So I'm sure that people were still willing to give him a shot. I mean, you look at PTA. How many of his movies were profitable? Wasn't it only like one or two?
Yeah, like one or two.
Yeah, but... He's a critical darling. Studios just want them under his... They just want him under his belt.
Which is interesting, because I think this is the kind of... I guess this is the movie that is so high-minded about itself that even when it fails, you kind of can go on the crutch of, like, people didn't get it. Like, no. I think that is the saving grace for a lot of these, like, experimental movies where he, you know... Theoretically, he could tell producers, like, oh, no, people just didn't get it. The studio messed it up. I had to rewrite it, etc.
Yeah. I'm curious as to, like, what kind of studio interference happened with this film. Because I know it had a very troubled production. I have a feeling he probably didn't want it to just be 90 minutes from the get-go. It feels like there's more he wanted to say. And honestly, I don't know if this movie would have benefited from, like, a Zack Snyder-length adaptation.
This does kind of feel like a Zack Snyder movie to assert, like, if Zack Snyder could make a movie under 100 minutes, this would be like what it came out to be.
Oh God, no, this is just, this feels like way more flat than anything Zack Snyder's ever done. Like this just feels like 90 minutes of a philosophical platitude that death is inevitable and moving past it is accepting it. And like, also here's some Buddhist imagery, like, because that makes sense. Oh, let me sprinkle in some white savior complex just for all the Americans too.
Yeah.
I mean, I think what clearly,
this movie's fucked.
What clearly went wrong, it feels like, if they had given him a 75 to begin with, I'm sure there was reason. Like, not, I'm not talking about the value of the script, but just like, this is a $75 million movie. Maybe, right? Like, maybe,
yeah,
that was a fair valuation. And taking that down to 35 is a pretty big jump. And this it just feels like it's... I think what we were saying last night was it feels like it's missing a lot. Like
A fourth storyline?
Like, I don't even know. Like, I don't want it to be longer, but it just feels like... You're trying to do something here, but I don't feel like I'm missing something that was here. It feels like you just didn't give me a complete thought. Or if this is your complete thought, you gotta have better thoughts.
Maybe you should think about it some more.
Yeah, like,
do you guys?
Well, no, what's the fucking message of this movie? What's the grand theme? What is the thesis that Aronofsky's trying to present here?
I think you said it. I think it's something about like death and, like, you know, you can't fight it and accepting that.
It's about death and grief, for sure, and that the answer to resolving your issues with death is to accept that you cannot escape it. Like, the path to immortality is the acceptance of death.
Yeah.
And
death is the path to awe.
Yeah, sure. And it's like, you know, so Aronofsky wrote this movie when he was in his 20s, and both his parents were diagnosed with cancer. And apparently the $70 million budget version, the reason that it got shut down is because Brad Pitt withdrew, and it was going over budget. So Aronofsky mm-hmm. ended up writing a bare bones version of it that would require much less special effects. And that's what they ended up like shooting. And apparently the rewrite of the script involving less special effects made the story much more concise. So I wonder, you know, we're talking about there might be something missing here, that the story being more concise is almost the part of it that makes it easier to dismiss. The fact that we can all get it right away, like, this is a movie about death and blah, 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 blah. And you didn't need to do all that floaty shit to get us there. Like, trees going through space.
Yeah, and it just felt like a weird amalgamation. Like, clearly one of the themes of the movie was like this intersection, this crossroads of how different religions view death and how each of them have like their own underworld or afterlife and everything, and they're all interlinked some way because humans inherently are focused on death. But it felt so fucking just cliched and kind of like it felt like appropriation in the third act when Hugh Jackman's character just straight up goes like full Buddhist out of nowhere.
Literally nowhere. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. Like, if you had at least had like some, you know, if you had focused, and maybe this was in the longer version where, you know, Hugh Jackman's dying wife in the present day starts talking like she had more time to discuss the philosophies on death of different cultures. Like, she clearly focused heavily on the Mayans and the Incas and like those, like, early Mesopotamian people, but she didn't really explore any of the other religions that the movie pulls iconography from. So it just
right, especially felt empty like Buddhism. To me.
Yeah,
it definitely felt out of left field for that part of it. Surely, let me talk of like a few things I guess that I liked about this movie.
Yeah,
that we probably should. I think that Hugh Jackman and Rachel Weisz were both good in this movie.
Yeah, completely agreed.
Yeah, hard agree.
Fuck.
Anything else?
We can hear
nope,
you.
Nope, that's it. All right.
Sorry, my headset is fucked up.
Oh, sorry. Well, you can edit this out, right? You guys got an
editor. Yeah, 13:10. Okay. I'll put a note in the fucking Discord.
Yeah,
for it.
Sorry. No, yeah, my headset like cut out for some reason. Let me restart my thought. Yeah. So one of the things that I really liked about this movie was I think Hugh Jackman and Rachel Weisz do a pretty good job in it. I think that especially the dramatic scenes, Hugh Jackman is really not pulling any punches. I think he's really executing on the vision that was given to him. I think the vision is a little bad, but like him,
yeah, he bought into it because that's his fucking job. He's an actor,
and he acted all of it. And I think that that's the almost the issue is that the virtuosity of the acting reveals the thin nature of the plot and how ineffective some of the actual narrative structure of the movie is.
Mm-hmm.
But I still think that the scenes of him trying to grapple with the fact that his wife is dying and him trying to fight that are you know, emotionally evocative. I think they did what we wanted them to do. It's just that like everything really outside of the main storyline of the scientist trying to save his wife felt like I didn't understand what movie they were a part of.
Yeah. Well, yeah. It all felt so unbalanced, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And especially because it doesn't feel like that right off the bat. I think like when it starts with like the, you know, him rushing the temple guards, and mm-hmm. you're like, oh, okay, like I didn't know this is what we're gonna start. Interesting. And then it has that thing where it keeps cutting back and forth between like him yelling at his wife and not yelling at his wife. And you're like, all right, okay, we're going to do this thing. And then it doesn't ever really go back to that. To like actually switching back and forth in a way where like, it just like feels like different sections from different things.
You know? It does, like entirely different, like without any, and not even, it feels like there should be connective tissue because the two parts, the conquistadors and the astronaut, don't stand on their own at all.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. There is no story to those aspects.
The most invested you are, I think, is that middle, maybe not middle exactly, but like a middle chunk where we're just like, oh fuck, is that monkey okay? How's that monkey surgery going? Like
Donovan.
Yeah, the science stuff and like him being angry at all his other, or not angry, but being a shitty fucking scientist to his fellow scientists.
Yeah. What about the tree? What about the tree found in Columbia? Put the tree in the monkey. Put the tree in the fucking monkey.
Oh yeah, the bit like the science talk in this movie was dog shit. Like them be like, you just gotta fold over the tree sample onto the other proteins.
Yeah,
and then he does it into his brain.
He's like, you gotta test them. Dude, and it's also like, upsetting that like, why? So they all, maybe I'm skipping ahead. Maybe this is a nitpick, but we're here. Like, everyone seems to know that like he's doing this for his wife. Everyone understands this. The boss clearly understands it, and she's cool with him flipping her over his own fucking office because she gets it. She understands. But then why in other situations do they not have any urgency or like any, like, it's weird when they choose to like acknowledge that they know and empathize with his whole thing.
Yeah. And then all they care about is the monkey. Like, hey, dude, we know your wife is dying, but the monkey's fucking killing it, man. Like,
hey, did you get my text,
he's
dude?
He's so smart again.
Yeah. Oh, man.
He's doing bad. He figured out how to ride a bike. I'm sorry, your wife is fucking dead. But the monkey's doing card tricks in the back.
Dude, I want that movie. There's a guy who's trying to grieve, but his coworkers keep calling him about this fucking sick monkey project.
Honestly,
that's a pitch. That's a fucking pitch right there.
When they go in and they talk about they're talking about surgery, and they go and they reveal that they're operating on a monkey.
Yeah,
I was like, I was in my living room, but I wanted to walk out of the theater.
Yeah, I'll just go to the theater to walk out of it. Like,
yeah. Oh my god,
Donovan, he's open, man. He's on the table. He's been waiting for you for like 40 minutes.
He's a monkey.
Yeah. Bro, my wife is dying. Who cares about the monkey?
Yeah.
Listen, I know your wife wants to go on a walk in this new snow and you do it every year that she's been alive. But the monkey, man. So they just open up the monkey and they just like, hey, just wait. Wait in some other room. He's not even like sterile, like cleaned up.
No.
They got to take him.
Yeah. Well, I love that. I love going back to that scene where the wife is asking him to go on a walk, like, hey, let's just go have fun or something. And then he's like,
fuck this monkey.
Damn it, no! I have a monkey to operate on! Like,
I'm trying to cure death, you idiot.
For you.
Yeah. I gotta put trees in things, man.
And there wasn't even any, I think, full resolution to the idea of, like, him acknowledging, like, oh, I fucked up. Instead of trying to save my wife, I should try to enjoy some good time with her.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, he cries about it a lot, and you can imply that, like, all right, maybe he's grappling it with in this scene. But, like, there's just so much shit just left on the table.
Okay, but there is, towards the end of the movie, he does maybe not go back in time and go for a walk with his wife instead of operating on the monkey. And I'm not sure if that's supposed to be canon or not. Like,
work?
I guess we're just fucking with the timeline continuity at this point.
What is the timeline? Can someone answer this question?
Yeah. So the conquistador is made up. That's the story.
It's a book.
That Rachel Weisz, modern time, is writing.
Yeah. And I'm like, okay, that's cute. That's like a cute way to tie these separate narratives together.
Right. And then so they figure out how to like reverse the aging process in modern science.
Right.
And so when he's like bald, it's the same scientist, but he's like using the anti-aging, like, he's eternal now, and he's like, there's this modern spaceship bullshit, and that's the tree that she grew into because she mentions that she wants to be a tree,
right?
And they're flying to Xibalba, which is the Mayan
Xibalba.
God, it's so stupid when you say it like that, but that's I think that's what it is.
Yeah,
they use science to go to a Mayan dying nebula.
Yeah, oh, because it, guess what? The Mayans had it right. Everybody else, fucking wrong. They didn't see the stars in the sky.
Fucking idiots.
The Mayans fucking nailed it, dude. They had a dagger with three holes in it, and it told them the truth.
That was one of my favorite parts. It's like, wait. This dagger's four little circles just look evenly apart from each other, so that could have been a sick design.
It's a symmetric pattern. Like,
yeah, like that's dope. But then, like, yeah, also depending on like how close or far from the light you held it, you would get a you know what's going on here. I think the fact that some of these things are like the fact that the timeline is so literal is really upsetting.
Yeah, it should have been more like, I can't believe I would say that this movie should have been more like Cloud Atlas.
Go ahead.
No, yeah, your text of like, this is like a shitty Cloud Atlas. It's like, yeah, I really think Cloud Atlas kind of almost perfected this like method of that. These stories, even if we figured out maybe that they connected more in at the end, it felt like I wanted more of like the Inquisitor and all that like crazy shit going on. I wanted to have these separate stories go on and me not really to understand what the connection was.
Yeah.
And then maybe to find out like, oh, I'm writing a story, it's about conquistadors, and you just, it's implied that that's what it's about.
Yeah. But, like, I wanted a bigger theme, like more connective tissue between these stories, in the same way that Cloud Atlas has like multiple themes that echo and rhyme throughout every story, all the six stories that it tells. I wanted that through this movie. And it's one of the reasons that I thought maybe this movie would have benefited from being like 3 hours.
So 3 hours long.
Time. Yeah, so you get time to spend with the conquistador. You get to see how his themes echo throughout the modern scientist story, and then how the fucking space tree traveler, Xibalba looking motherfucker. I just realized Xibalba's a Star Wars character, too.
Yeah. Xibalba is the nebula. Xibalba is the pottery.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, God.
But yeah, it just felt empty with, like, because it just felt like flavor around, because clearly the main story is the scientist story.
Yes, that is the story that we're supposed to care about.
Yeah, but it could have been so much more. It felt like, because this movie clearly wants to be epic with the different perspectives it's taking on how humanity views death. But it turns out it's just like, oh, yeah, every story is just, like, about a man who wants to stop people from dying. It's like,
it's about Hugh Jackman doing tai chi until he gets to a nebula.
Yeah, and then travels back in time to convince a fucking Mayan father to kill himself.
Dude,
yeah.
Oh, God, man, what the fuck is this? Maybe not a fair question too. I'll preface with, like, because we know Cloud Atlas, and I guess just like We're more used to than ever to the idea of alternate dimensions, and just we've seen this shit done in interesting ways.
We've all watched Rick and Morty.
Yeah. Like, was this movie maybe not even trying to do that? Like, and I don't think that's to its credit. Because when I saw the trailer and then Robert basically described the trailer before I saw it, it was like, okay, like that Robert described that accurately. This movie seems like it's gonna do the Cloud Atlas thing, but because there's an explanation for it all in such a convenient way with the book, and then like he just lived, is how we get to the third timeline. It just feels like, why? It didn't explore death at all, like, because it's really two timelines. Right, it's the one timeline is the same. It's just
one timeline
and
one made up thing.
Yeah, like,
yeah,
I don't know, man.
It really feels like the only purpose of like the conquistador flashbacks really just feels like, oh, the Mayans were right.
Yeah, like it feels like it might have been better served if you're cutting back and forth without the Mayan thing, and it's the idea of like, maybe the interesting narrative structure is cutting back and forth to like this man going through it and then this man regretting all of it and trying to deal with it and fix the you know the mistake or not the mistake, but I guess it was a mistake because he was very close to just saving his wife, apparently, right?
Yeah.
So I think maybe that's even more interesting. But I think the really the third layer. If he would have
went on less walks with his wife, he could have saved her.
Exactly.
That's the real method of the story.
But so
wow, like, that's actually true.
Did he
not
take the walk with his wife?
Yeah. No, if he would have just completely like stopped answering his wife's phone calls, then he would have like he would have thought of the sap thing earlier and they would have figured out this monkey thing. You know, honestly, if he would have just experimented on his wife, like, forget the
yeah,
monkey.
Yeah, he should have just fucking
cut the middleman.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, time is running out.
Monkey through this stuff.
It's like, dude, your wife is standing in the snow with her toes freezing off. You gotta do something, man.
That was an awful
yeah, you're a doctor.
Moment to realize that's what was happening there. That just seems
yeah,
so I mean, awful.
God, this, yeah, the movie, like, honestly, the middle part, I think, was so, was good. I'll say it good. Like the middle sections, I think it really did a good job of portraying the melodrama of this guy and his wife is dying and he cannot come to terms with it. I enjoyed that part and I felt, you know, I was moved by it and it was just surrounded by all this other dog shit. Like that
yeah.
didn't make any sense. Bald Hugh Jackman in his stupid bald cap doing
yeah.
Tai Chi in a full lotus.
Yeah. Tree bark.
Yeah, I'm going to do some,
eating
some
his
trivia
wife.
Here. But, yeah.
The tree bark is the wife.
The trees, yeah. He ate his wife. He's a responsible husband.
Yeah.
But Hugh Jackman did Tai Chi for like 6 months to do it for that 30-second shot. And he did yoga for an entire year to be able to do the full lotus. When he does it in the movie.
Wow.
I mean, hopefully he still does it. It's great for you. I wish I could do that.
Yeah, those opening up of the hips.
Yeah.
It's my hips are so tight.
So
enough about me.
Yeah.
Yeah, all right, let's get into the categories. I guess who's the MVP of this movie? Some nominees are everyone but Darren Aronofsky.
Yeah, I'm going to give it to Donovan.
Donovan the monkey. He
yeah.
really had the panic of a monkey who knows what kind of movie he's in.
Yeah.
Well, why did they have him in that like vice, that plexiglass like vice grip? Be like, hey, the thing had healed. And you just see Donovan and he's like trapped in this thing. And it's like,
yeah.
do you have a cage for him or something? Like,
yeah.
You gotta...
It's in case they want to poke him, dude.
Yeah, exactly. Sorry, Donovan, you're going back under again.
Yeah.
Okay. What do you think Donovan was doing, like, normally? Or do you think he just always had a tumor?
How do you think he got... He's probably smoking a shit ton of cigarettes.
There's a cosmetics facility testing.
Through the brain, yeah.
Pour shampoo in his eyes and make him smoke cigarettes. I think it's Hugh Jackman. Because I think he really carries it. And I think that if he was... I think all 52% of the Rotten Tomatoes score that he's got was Hugh Jackman. I think if he does anything less than what he did, it's zero.
Yeah, I agree. I think he's the only reason this movie is liked at all.
Yeah, I'll give a nudge to Rachel Weisz. I think she'll also, you know, she did the job. And she it's funny because at the moment which she's in the like the dress as the queen, I was like, oh, that's why they cast her. Because she just looks good in, like, fucking Victorian-era clothing.
She looks regal. Yeah, that's why she was in The Favorite, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's just a gorgeous woman and a pretty good actress.
Fucking white people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what. hamming it up. Who's got the hammiest acting in the movie? I'm going to give it to the fucking Inquisitor. No nominations, but it's him. When he's... putting his blood on the map.
Oh,
he's
man.
Like, it belongs to me. And he's bringing up all the servants of the queen and then dropping them somewhere. Oh, my God. It was hilarious. I loved it. I wanted more of that guy. I want
yeah,
more of, like, what's going on with this fantasy.
Same. Like, it was like, you introduced this guy who, like, he seems like it could be intimidating. And then he just literally fades into the background. They never mention him again.
and it looks like he has most of Spain and a lot of Portugal. And then the queen is like, hey, by the way, you need to go to the find the tree of life so that we can all live forever before this guy comes and kills me.
Yeah, I don't know what the fucking what was the plan there. Also, like, I thought Spain was already a Spanish country, like it was a Christian country, like a Christian empire.
Right, but the Inquisitors came. Well, it used to be the Moors came up through the Arabian Peninsula, and then that's what the Spanish Inquisition was, the Catholic priests coming in and murdering the heretics. And but that's why people in Spain kind of have slightly darker complexions because of the Moorish blood. Same with Sicilians, you know. We've all seen
Wild.
True Romance,
The Sopranos.
Yeah. So, but yeah, it's weird that because she's looking for the tree for the Fountain of Youth, which is what a hammy. Like, why it's called the Fountain? It's the Fountain of Youth, but it's really the Tree of Life. And yeah. It's like pick
we fucking
a thing,
we
dude.
Fucking yeah. We got it, dude. Like,
yeah.
It's fascinating that like we know there's a great movie before this and great movies after. It almost makes it just way more fucking interesting to know he still had like, because I mean there had to have been some shit, a lot of problems here. I think we've talked about that, but I just can't believe it's like, if we would have watched this, I would have assumed it was like some hack director. You know?
Yeah, that somehow got access to like A-list movie stars.
Yeah.
One A-lister and one B-plus lister. A-minus lister.
B-plus.
B-plus.
I think she gets higher as we get further into the 2000s.
Yeah, but I still wouldn't. I don't know if I would go see a movie just because Rachel. Well, I don't know. I would actually.
Yeah.
Gosh. What a movie. It was interesting to watch a movie that was I could see why people like it, and it's upsetting to see a movie where you see a lot of good but there's enough bad weighing it down to just drag it to the bottom of the ocean.
Yeah. And like I want someone to come along and like really try to convince me that this movie is actually fucking great and that I just misunderstood it, but it'll be interesting. I feel like that won't happen. It does seem to have kind of a cult following, though.
You know, they do this thing on Wikipedia. I don't know if you've noticed, but sometimes you go to a movie and it'll say, like, the movie did bad but has since gained a cult following. And there's no way you can cite that source. Like, what does that even mean? Like,
yeah. Well, I just look at, like, the reviews. Like, it's got, like, a 7.2 on IMDb. It's not bad.
Is this like video games, though? Is it like everything is artificially inflated on IMDb?
Probably.
I think a little, but.
And like a 7.2.
But
is
it's like it's
bad.
It still means that there were enough people to go out of their way after watching The Fountain, especially considering The Fountain only made $13 million at the box office, that there were enough people to go out of their way to rate this movie 7 or above.
Yeah, that's. I definitely think that there are some. I could see this being a movie where if you saw it at the right time, you would think it was amazing.
Yeah. Like, if I had just turned, like, if I was, like, 13.
If I just turned 15 and yeah.
I saw this movie.
15-year-olds hate this movie. I don't think 15-year-olds like this movie.
No, yeah. This is, well, I think if you figure out what debt, maybe, like, 20, like, I think if I had maybe seen this movie when I got into the real world out of college, and I started realizing that death is a real thing and it's like you can't run away from it. Mm-hmm. I think it could have been like a big movie, but I think that the problem is like it's way too emotional and it's so apparent. It's so transparent on what it wants to be. And you're like, yeah, I get it. You got the good performances. You got some well-written out like scenes. And then you added all this timey-wimey bullshit to make it confusing. Like, it's very, like, almost Inception-like, it's where like it's about loss
depth.
And grief. What'd you say?
Artificial depth.
Yes. Right. It's like one of those pools. You know how they, in movies, they'll take, like, 3 inches of water and dye it black to make it look like a deep pool? That's what this is like.
Yeah.
That's you know, that's a Snyder special effect for you there, Robert. That's what they use for the Batcave. I've been watching a lot of behind the scenes.
Yeah, you have.
Yeah, I've got no control over the things that I watch.
Hey, man, the Snyder eventually pulls everybody into his gravitational core.
I accept death as it comes for me. What's the specialist special effect? There's a lot of special effects in this movie, and they're all pretty out there. What's like the best one? I think some nominees are any of like the space stuff is pretty out there. The plants coming out of the conquistador.
Yeah, I thought that was probably my favorite effect, is after he drinks the elixir of life and just like grows plants. That was pretty gruesome. Yeah. I was into it.
Pretty gruesome. The floating Zen Lotus Boy.
No, that was fucking that was, stupid.
The motion of it just wasn't right. It made me uncomfortable.
Also, just when, like when he appears before the priest, and the Mayan priest is just like, "Oh, I'm sorry, First Father. I didn't realize it was you."
Big Quetzalcoatl vibes, for sure. On that, although I'm pretty sure that was the Aztecs, so I'm like, what is? I mean, I don't know my native history as well as I could, but it definitely rang a little bit true. But I was still like, what? How? What the fuck is? Because he's suddenly traveling through time. He's traveling through the time to be.
I guess. Story. But yeah, I was like, this story is also fictional, so it doesn't exist in our actual timeline. So.
Yeah. Exactly. So I'm like, what?
Yeah.
It's too coherent to have that many, like, it's, you know, like, I guess Cloud Atlas would be like, you have these movies where they're so loose and up for debate that it's hard to say, you know, what it's about. And you can have a debate on what it's about. There's too much connective tissue for this to be anything less than plot holes. Like, it's almost, it's too plainly spoken and too literal.
Yeah,
like this, you know it's happening, and then other things happen, you're like, but based on the rules that we've already established, you're fucking with me now. Yeah, like this scene is from a movie that I didn't watch for the last like 45 minutes.
Yeah,
it goes out of its way to connect things that didn't need connection. That, yeah, there's no, you can't fucking just forgive it for other connections not made.
Yeah, god. Most rewatchable scene. God, I don't even know.
It's when the father's lashing himself.
Yeah, it's that. Honestly, that whole conquista, like when Hugh Jackman's gonna, Tomas is gonna shoot the Inquisitor with a crossbow, which I don't know why he did. I don't understand what the point of not doing that was.
Yeah.
Hey, the queen wants to talk to you. Yeah, I'm about to kill the guy who's
coming to kill queen. Her. Like,
yeah, it's like. Yeah, no, but she's got to talk like, to you about the right now.
Right now. We got to go right now. He's like,
you got to go to New Spain, dude.
Literally pull right. A trigger. Solve this problem.
Yeah, god. That or the first scene, I think. Honestly, all, like the Conquistador stuff was the most watchable.
I like the Conquistador
raw
stuff.
Entertainment value.
Yeah. I did also really enjoy the scene, again, just because the performances are great between Rachel Weisz and Hugh Jackman. In the bathtub when she's making fun of him for like losing his ring, and then it turns into like him like, I actually care about you, don't make jokes about that, that shit hurts. And then
yeah,
she's losing all feelings of like heat and cold. Like this is, yeah, this scene progresses very well. This hits hard.
Oh yeah, I hope she's a redhead.
Yeah.
And like, that was good. Suddenly you start learning what the scene's about, and then it's before you really know what's going on.
Yeah.
You can kind of see that something's wrong. She might be sick.
Yeah.
And then it all kind of comes to a head.
And I'm like, that's Aronofsky. That's the Aronofsky I was hoping to see throughout this entire film.
Yeah. And I wonder if that's why the next movie that he makes is The Wrestler, because that is so grounded in reality.
Oh, yeah. Wow, I didn't even think about that.
And it does so much better. It is. I really love The Wrestler. I think it's a great movie. It's too bad that Mickey Rourke only got Iron Man 2 after that. But it's like that is like I think is a really fantastic movie with great emotionally grounded performances. So it's like this guy can direct and he can write great scenes. He's just gotta enter this like Harvard bullshit, high minded stuff behind it, and it can't just be about a thing.
Yeah,
it still needs to be a good movie.
Yes, and for you know, to his credit, he's got a pretty decent batting average.
Oh yeah,
he's batting over 300. You know,
easily.
Just you know, sometimes you
It just feels like people were like,
drop third strike, get thrown out of first base. I don't know, baseball metaphors.
Yeah, Requiem did great. Darren, you're hot. We want to get your next project. What do you got for us? Well, I do have this other idea that I didn't make into a movie. And instead I made Requiem in Pi.
Yeah.
Let's make
that. Based on the ass to ass scene. You know, ass to ass guy, he makes an appearance.
Oh, no, I don't know ass to ass guy.
No, you don't remember Requiem for a Dream? There is, oh man, it's a brutal movie at the very end.
Ass to ass.
If you could find the clip.
If you just search Requiem ass on Google, the first thing is ass to ass on YouTube.
Oh yeah, I just searched ass to ass. Here it is. Wow. It's just some fucking suit.
Some real old guy just like ass to ass.
I love the thing.
You know how many times I just hear that jangling around in my head?
Nope.
Be washing the dishes.
Evidently like, a lot, to yeah.
Taking the sponge and scraping off some of the dirty stuff and be like ass to ass.
We can talk about this at a later time. So I feel like one of us is going to put Requiem for a Dream on as their film of choice.
Yeah, sorry for the deep spoiler.
Yeah,
I'm not.
I don't.
It ties the whole movie together.
Yeah, you'd be surprised. It's a big callback. Nitpicks. I don't even, nip. It's all.
It's
I think
all.
We've been
yeah, we've
it
been picking
time.
It all day.
The whole thing.
Whole thing's a nitpick.
Yeah, is this movie? Here's gonna be our new category: above or below 50%.
I like that.
So, is it technically, or is it like exactly 50%?
What on like Rotten Tomatoes or what?
No, just in your
no,
mind.
Just our opinion.
In I your think. Heart.
Oh, okay.
I think this movie, if I'm just gonna put a number on it, I'm gonna go like 55. I want 60 feels too, like when I say 60 aloud, it feels too generous.
Yeah.
But I think like if we're really on like a, you know, 100-point scale, this movie does a lot of things at a high level, right? Like that just like it looks good. I think for as old as the movie is, like it looks pretty good.
Right.
It's not like shot bad. The music is good. Like the performances are good. But it just does not come together in a lot of other places. And I think yeah. It's not even like any specific aspect except just the story. Right? Like
yeah.
The whole
I already know
part.
That Roger Ebert gave Cloud Atlas a 4 out of 4. Rob, I remember everything that's ever happened to me.
Yeah, I just need to make sure everybody knows.
I agree with you, Elmer. I think it's somewhere between like 51 and like 55. And maybe even between 54 and 56. Like, it's definitely in that area of, like... And it's all Hugh Jackman really bringing us there. He's dragging us. This movie is, like, an easy, like, 35 to 45. And Hugh Jackman, like, brings it.
Just
it's
wills
him
it.
Clutching a tree and saying, don't die. So, yeah, I think it's right. I think it's above 50. I think it's right in that, like, 54 to 56 range.
Oh, the 52 on IMDb, or was it Rotten Tomatoes? Or Metacritic?
Yeah, Rotten Tomatoes.
Rotten Tomatoes. It's kind of shocking that it's, like, you rarely look at a number, you're like, oh, that's right.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
I don't know. I think like, this movie's overrated.
Yeah? You think you're going below?
I would go, like, 35.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
This just, we just have different scales.
This movie, it's pretentious bullshit, and I feel okay saying that because I know that Darren Aronofsky has a lot of talent in him and has written great films before. And I think as much as jaded and, you know, callous as it is to say this, I think a lot of it is because he wrote this so young and so, let's say, starry-eyed, that it just comes off as, like, just empty platitudes about what death means to people. And I'm sure he was going through a lot. He was trying to work through his grief. Clearly, he didn't work through it that well. Or, maybe he worked through it emotionally, internally, but whatever translated onto the page, I don't think is as profound as he was hoping it was.
Right, yeah. I think that there is definitely a level of, we get it, yeah, you need to accept death. And it seems like it was a very emotional experience for everyone working on the movie, but yeah, I don't really have too much trivia for this. We kind of went to the whole production thing. I feel like if we go into a trivia deep dive on Aronofsky, it's going to be a lot of pretentious bullshit about the Bible. And, like, I don't want that.
Just wait
till
we watch Noah.
Oh, God. Yeah, I don't know if I'd rather watch Noah or Mother. I've never seen Noah.
You've never seen Noah?
No. I've seen Mother, though. And Mother was a weird time. Mother is what is this movie. Like, Mother is the more refined version of this movie.
Mm-hmm.
And still, Mother, I think, is one of the most divisive movies I've ever seen.
The metaphor is that she's Mother Earth, man.
Yeah. Well, I get it. Yeah. Oh, God. So, yeah. Who do we decide was next? Who was in the middle? Or, no, we moved it all up one. So, if I was last...
I think Amr's next, because...
It doesn't matter.
Went first last time.
I think my pick, no matter what, should be next. Because my pick is The Wrestler. So, okay. I think it'd be convenient to just do them back-to-back right now. Just to have, you know, this shit fresh in our mind and really appreciate The Wrestler.
Yeah.
We can only go up from here. Yeah, I'm excited to watch The Wrestler. I haven't seen it in a long time. I don't know where we can find it to stream, but I bet it's somewhere.
You just rent it on YouTube. It's like $3.
Rent it on YouTube. What an insane idea.
That's all we've been doing. My Google account's linked. It's super easy.
You rent it on YouTube?
Yeah.
It's better than Vudu and all the other things?
I think so. The user interface is great. I use it all the time. And my, you know, my Google Pay account is already set up, so it's easy.
Mm. And you have YouTube TV though, too, right?
It's just through the YouTube app though that we watch it.
Yeah, we just watch the YouTube app on Roku.
It'll just appear if you just search right now Batman Begins, it'll give you
the option to rent it.
Yeah. I don't know why I said Batman Begins. I don't know why that was my example in movie that's
on your mind, yeah.
Yeah, we're watching Batman. We're doing all Batman movies after this, so.
That would be fun, dude.
It would be weird.
That would be fun.
I really need an excuse to rewatch Batman
in the lead
and
up to the Robert Pattinson Batman. Yeah.
That'd be fun.
Yeah, we could do that.
We don't have to do all of them. That's a lot. But
damn, Aronofsky has nothing in the works right now. What do you think his next movie is?
Father.
Fatherfucker.
Yeah.
No. What? Yeah. Does he? He had nothing in the works. Like nothing. Future film projects.
Mm-mm. At least not directing wise. He's producer on some documentary.
Interesting. Maybe that's his next thing. I don't know. Wow. Yeah. Mother is it's the few F CinemaScore grades.
Yep. Yeah, people were pissed at that movie.
Because I remember it was sold as a horror movie. And yes. It is a lot of things. It is not a horror movie.
Yeah, it's weird.
It is definitely weird. And a lot of horror movies are weird. So. Oh, he was originally going to direct The Wolverine.
That would have been wild.
That would have been weird.
That movie already didn't exist, so that would have been more interesting.
Yeah, God, it would have had a weirder third act, less robot samurai, more robot god.
would have been better, honestly. I think the third act of The Wolverine is fucking atrocious, and it almost makes me dislike the movie as a whole.
Which is upsetting because The Wolverine is, I think, one of the better X-Men movies until that point.
Yes, yeah, the first two thirds of that film are fantastic.
Is that the Japan one?
Yep,
am I thinking of the right one? Man, all I remember from that movie is there's a scene where he's tied up all the tubes and he has to break out. Is Lucy Liu in that?
No, I think no, you're thinking racist. Of the. I think you're thinking of just Wolverine Origins.
Oh, X-Men okay.
Origins Wolverine.
No. I'm thinking of the Japan one.
When he's got all the tubes in him?
He's got a bunch of arrows in him. Like all the ninjas are shooting like the rope arrows at him.
Man, yeah, I guess I just... I'm mixing up my Wolverines.
I mean, there's a lot.
The tubes one is the one where he's...
That's Origins. I know what you're talking about. The tubes, I'm talking about different tubes.
You're talking about different tubes. I get you. Well, everybody, it's been a great podcast. Find out next week what fucking tubes Elro was talking about.
Dude, I'll show you these tubes.